for diabetes mellitus and the terminology, the ICD-9 or ICD version 9. We also saw the Medical Entities Dictionary, which stores the drug codes. But let's dig a little deeper into terminologies. First, why do we care about terminology? As mentioned, if a medical concept can be given a term coding with a specific number perhaps assigned to it, it will allow a lot of important actions to be carried out by computers. For example, we can reuse data. We can look to see how many patients have diabetes mellitus and how many have a hemoglobin A1C above or below a certain level. We can transfer information. We can send, if we send the record of a patient here to Mount Sinai Hospital and the ICD-9 code is included, the Mount Sinai Hospital knows exactly what is wrong with that patient. Whereas without the coding, it would be impossible. There are some general classes of terms. We've discussed them already. There's diagnoses. We've already discussed diabetes mellitus and kidney disease. There are diagnostic procedures, such as chest X-rays, electrocardiograms. There's lab tests. We've seen terms, codes for the hemoglobin A1C. Obviously, there are codes for all the other lab tests, such as creatinine. We've seen that one before. And we've talked a bit about medications. There will be terms. Those are clearly important terms that should be included in some terminology that we can refer to. To come back to our definitions of term, a term is a word or phrase that is associated with a specific concept or meaning. And so, as we discussed in the prior section, a term cannot have two meanings, and two terms cannot mean the same thing. It's very important that in the best terminologies, control terminologies, that a term represents a specific concept or meaning. A terminology is a set of these terms, and again, it's intended to convey information unambiguously. A vocabulary are terms with a definition, and we'll see that the UMLS and SNOMED has definitions assigned to the terms, which are very helpful for a variety of actions. And lastly, a controlled vocabulary. Just to reiterate, all terms have unambiguous, non-redundant definitions, and unfortunately, not all the terminologies that we use are unambiguous. But we'll discuss that in a few minutes. The terminologies that we'll briefly discuss are ICD-9, International Classification of Diseases, and there are several versions of it, CPT, NDC. These are all sets of abbreviations that have no meaning to you, but we're certainly going to drill down. I've already mentioned the SNOMED and UMLS, and we'll talk about those in a second. Let's talk again about ICD-9. We discussed that it's a strict hierarchy, and the code determines its place in the hierarchy. So 240.4 is clearly a child of 240. As we saw in the prior example, there's diabetes, and then a child of diabetes might be diabetes with kidney complications. There's also a fascinating and annoying classification called NEC, not elsewhere classified. And here's a situation where there's no specific code to represent the condition. The diagnostic statement in the note is specific, but the coding system is not specific enough. I'm going to show you a great example of that in a second. And then there's also, what if the coder is reading through the chart and can't figure out if it's diabetes with and without a complication, or some other disease where there's just not enough information to know how to assign a more specific code, and that is referred to as not otherwise specified. And I recognize that this may seem a little bit obtuse at this point, but just hang in there. you will see these NECs and NOSs in the ICD-9 coding hierarchy. I think a good example of not elsewhere classified is the hepatitis story, and I'd like to think about this in terms of the engine of discovery. Initially, there was hepatitis A and B, and each had an ICD-9 code. And there were patients with hepatitis that was neither A nor B. We literally called them non-A, non-B hepatitis. There were ICD-9 codes listed for non-A and non-B as NEC, not elsewhere classified. That there was a code for A and there was a code for B. And if it wasn't A or B, then the patient was assigned the code of not elsewhere classified. I'm going to have a table that's going to follow this in a second, which will make this a lot easier to understand. Non-A and non-B was eventually identified as hepatitis C. And so now there was hepatitis A, hepatitis B, hepatitis C. They all had codes, but then there were still patients with hepatitis without A, without B, or A, without C, and once again they were coded as not elsewhere classified. We can see this in the development of the hepatitis ICD-9 codes in these two tables. On the left, we see the era of before hepatitis C was identified, hepatitis A had a code, 70.1, hepatitis B had a code, 70.3, and then non-A, non-B was this sort of catch-all, 70.5, hepatitis not elsewhere classified. Then the following year, hepatitis C was identified, became a full-fledged, code-carrying member of the ICD-9 hierarchy, and now hepatitis C was coded as 70.4, but there were still people with hepatitis who were either non-A, non-B, non-C, and so they were given, again, the NEC categorization. So my only point here is that these are dynamic terminologies that are not static. You know, the ICD-9s are constantly, the ICD terminologies are constantly growing, and that's exemplified, in fact, in this next slide, where you can see the history of ICD, starting with version 1 in 1900. There were 179 terms that were in the hierarchy. Now there are over 10,000. There are new discoveries all the time, and the terminologies must take this into account, so they're constantly being updated. Let's briefly talk about some of the other terminologies that you're going to see in your work with the electronic record. There's the CPT, Current Procedural Terminology. This was developed and owned by the AMA. It costs money. It's required for procedure reimbursement. So if you go do a procedure, remove something, take a picture of something, in order to bill for it, you need to assign a CPT code. It's also used in evaluation and management coding. If you go and say, I saw the patient and I did this level of work and I did this level of management, there are codes for that. We're not going to delve into that, but I just wanted you to be aware of that. So here are some CPT examples, and you can see there's a code for unilateral mammography. Not surprisingly, there's a code for bilateral mammography. That's got to be billed at a different level. Obviously, there's screening mammography, bilateral, to view film study of each breast. So they're very specific. You know, digitization of the film is a different code. And this is a terminology that is routinely used for procedural billing. Then there are diagnosis-related groups. And their use, DRGs as we refer to them, they're used to determine how much Medicare pays to the hospital. See, it's thought that patients with similar histories, maybe they have pneumonia, they need antibiotics, they need x-rays, that they're clinically similar, and they're expected to use the same level of hospital resources. Again, this was developed to bill for reimbursement for specific kinds of clinical conditions. So you can imagine if you took a bunch of patients and you looked at their ICD-9 codes and their CPT codes, what their diseases were and what the procedures and treatments were, that they divide up into quite predictable groups. There are 500 groups, and they're expected to use hospital resources in a similar manner. So some examples of DRG, for example, pneumonia. 75 is a respiratory disease with major chest operating room procedure, but no major complication or comorbidity. 76 is the same, but with minor complication or comorbidity. And 77 is similar, with other respiratory system operating procedure. You can see that that the level of care and presumably resources utilized is different for each of these groups, and that was the intention of the DRG. Let's go to another terminology for drugs, national drug codes. And for this example, we chose atorvastatin, which is to lower lipids, and you can see that there are codes for an extreme level of granularity. Atorvastatin calcium has a different code than atorvastatin, and atorvastatin calcium at 20 milligram tablets has a different code from the 40 milligram tablets or the 10 milligram tablets. This is not unexpected, of course, but it would be a key. A pharmacy would need to access these codes or have the implement these codes, and a decision support tool might want to look at those codes. It would want to be able to distinguish between the 10 and the 20 milligram tablets. There are potential drug ontologies that would be useful. These are not available, and I thought you might just be interested in hearing about two different approaches. Drugs can be classified in one of two different ways, and just go back to the ontology that we discussed with the lab test. Consider the ontology again, which shows relationships, where a drug is a. If we go at the very bottom, the children on the left side, captopril is a angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitor, which is in that box, and is an antihypertensive. So we can look at the drugs as what are all the drugs that are used for blood pressure control, antihypertensive, and the other one is the beta blocker with children, propranolol, metoprolol. But we could also look at how drugs are classified chemically or physiologically. There are adrenergic blockers. There are two kinds of adrenergic blockers. There's the alpha blocker and the beta blocker. Well, we see the beta blocker here, which are the same drugs that are antihypertensives, are now classified as adrenergic blockers. And I think this gives you some idea of the complexity of hierarchies. On one hand, these are ontologies, and they're pretty straightforward, that a drug is a member of, which is a member of. Now, that's pretty strict, but you see here that they're two completely different parents. One is the indication classification, and the other is drug class. There are terminologies for lab tests. LOINC, logical observation, identifiers, names, and codes. Well, that's a mouthful. And it helps exchanging results. Again, if you're at Mount Sinai and we're transferring data over to you on our patients and they had a blood test, you'd want to have the information communicated as unambiguously as possible. The structure of the LOINC message is pretty specific. The actual coding information includes the component, what is being measured, for example, urea. What are the properties of what's being measured? Is it length or mass or volume or units? What is the time interval? What's the system? Was it blood or urine that the test was drawn from? Give an idea of scale. Is it quantitative, like 4.2? Or is it qualitative, 3 plus, or narrative? And lastly, the method. How was the procedure What was the procedure used to make the measurement? So here's a typical LOINC communication. We see that in the top portion, glucose was measured 3 hours after 100 grams of glucose were given to the patient. So this is a classic glucose tolerance test. Scroll down a little bit to the coagulation thrombin-induced time. This is a clotting test. The next one is creatine kinase to rule out a heart attack. These are all, you see codes before and after, letters. These are all ways to communicate that what this specific lab test was. And you see there's a lot more information here than just the code for the actual test. There are nursing terminologies. There are several of them. They have different areas of focus. For example, the ANANDA system has encoding information for diagnosis and judgments. There's one for interventions, outcomes, family functioning, goals, patient mood will stabilize, for example. That's quite interesting. So, and again, this represents the fact that terminologies serve different purposes. I'd like to spend 2 minutes talking about MESH as another terminology, medical subject heading, MESH. It's a way to list in a hierarchical fashion all medical conditions that are known. And so, for example, let's take the simple concept of pneumonia, and there is a MESH heading, D011014, called pneumonia. And this is used by PubMed in order to help users find articles in the medical literature. So, for example, on the left side, we see three different articles. There's an article on pneumonia, an article on diagnosis of serious lung infection, and an article on influenza, which, as we know, causes pneumonia. Now, what's interesting is only one of those three articles actually has the word pneumonia in it, but a human will assign the code of 11014, pneumonia, to all three articles, because the human will know that influenza discussion relates to pneumonia, and diagnosis of serious lung infection. And as a result of this code, a PubMed search of pneumonia will find all three articles, even though two of them did not mention pneumonia. So MESH is another terminology, very powerful. It drills down as well. It gets more granular. Pneumonia has children, such as bacterial pneumonia, 18410, and bacterial pneumonia also has its children, pneumococcal pneumonia, Legionnaire's disease. They don't always make sense because pneumocystis carinii pneumonia is not actually bacterial pneumonia, nor is mycoplasma, strictly speaking, but it's close enough. But these terms in this terminology are extremely useful in categorizing articles in Medline. Now, there are two terminologies that they're a little sloppier, that they're polyhierarchy, and they're certainly not ontologies, and we're going to discuss that in a second, but it's what I would refer to as terminology plus. You get a little more than just the words. You might get information that includes a definition. Now that's helpful. I mean, you saw the MESH terms that I just discussed when discussing the PubMed search. There's no definition. It doesn't say what pneumonia is. So it would be nice to have a terminology with definitions, and there would also be very helpful to know what category the term was. It's what we call semantic type. What is it related to? Is it a disease or a syndrome, or it is a sign or symptom? You see, they're very different, a sign and symptom, or a disease and syndrome. Or a semantic type could be a drug, could be a procedure. So these terminologies that I'm going to speak about in a second have the semantic types, which again have been assigned by humans, just to make that clear, and and offer the user of these terminologies much more than just here's the name of the term. There's also, and I'll show an example in a second, relationships between terms. And the terminology, like such as SNOMED or UMLS, can provide some information about the relationship. For example, there could be a relationship between a drug and a disease. A drug treats disease. Actually, you know, now that we're thinking of it, for this example, it could also be another relationship, which is, you know, diseases caused by drug. I mean, certainly the circumstances where a disease is actually caused by a drug. So let's talk a little bit about SNOMED and the UMLS. SNOMED stands for Systematized Nomenclature of Medicine. SNOMED. Clinical terms. There's a version of it, CT, which is used primarily, and we'll discuss that. It's systematically organized, computer-processable collection of medical terms. And it covers all the things you think were important. Diseases and findings, procedures, microorganisms, bacteria, viruses, etc., pharmaceuticals. And as I've alluded to and actually discussed a couple of times, we have these terminologies so we can index and store and retrieve and aggregate clinical data across specialties and sites of care. And by using these terminologies, we'll be able to communicate better with each other. And we can use it to organize the medical record. And that's really the whole point of this whole discussion today. SNOMED, and if you have a browser open, you might just go search SNOMED. It's very powerful, and it's actually quite a lot of fun. But the first thing to note about SNOMED is that it's not a strict hierarchy. That is, a strict hierarchy would be something like this, where there are no other arrows, that cholera and meningitis are infectious diseases, and tuberculosis is a lung disease. Well, we know that's not true. We know that tuberculosis is both an infectious disease and a lung disease. And we see here that a characteristic of SNOMED, that it's not an ontology, it is a polyhierarchy, which has great value because we could ask the computer to say, well, what is tuberculosis? Well, it would point to a lung disease and an infectious disease. That would be very helpful. Or we could say, what are three common infectious diseases? Well, it would be cholera, meningitis, and tuberculosis. Or in another query, we say, well, what are some lung diseases? And tuberculosis would show up. The polyhierarchy has great utility. And SNOMED is interesting in that it, just like the drug ontology I mentioned before, where a drug could be categorized either by its indications or its class, many of the conditions in SNOMED can be characterized in different hierarchies. For example, diabetes mellitus could be categorized as a disorder. Of course, it is a disorder, but it also could be categorized as a clinical finding. And if you look at the two arrows there, we see the same concept is mapped to two different hierarchies, clinical findings and disorder. If we are now, I'm using the website for SNOMED here, we can look at the different hierarchies and see where diabetes points up to. First, let's look at the hierarchy for disorder. And we see here, quite interestingly, is that, again, it's a polyhierarchy. Diabetes mellitus is a disorder of glucose metabolism, yes, and it is a disorder of the endocrine pancreas. That is also true. And one could, again, see the benefit here of saying to the computer, find all the patients with disorders of glucose metabolism, it would find diabetes. And in a completely separate query, for unrelated to glucose metabolism, say, I want to find all patients, I'm taking out the pancreas, what disorders might result? Diabetes mellitus would be also found in that search. And there's another way to organize the hierarchy, in addition to is a diabetes mellitus, is a disorder of glucose metabolism, it can be has finding site. You know, where is the site that this disease emanates from or comes from? And diabetes clearly has finding site in the pancreas. So again, this, you know, the example of I'm taking out the pancreas, what diseases am I going to possibly encounter as a result of that diabetes mellitus we found? So SNOMED has a polyhierarchy and is really useful because of the ability to formulate queries that answer different questions and find parents and children of particular conditions in different hierarchies depending upon what the query is. Now let's go on to the UMLS, which just a little history here. Don Lindbergh in 1993 started developing the UMLS with his colleagues at the National Library of Medicine, and in his little blurb wrote, "The purpose is to improve the ability of computer programs to understand the biomedical meaning and user inquiries, and to use this understanding to retrieve and integrate relevant machine-readable information for users." So what's both fabulous and nerve-wracking about the UMLS, it's basically all the controlled vocabularies that I've just discussed put into one big terminology and relationships established, and it can provide a mapping structure among the vocabularies and allows translation. And I showed one example of that when I will be showing an example of that later on when we discuss how you could use the UMLS to convert from one terminology to another. It's also a great thesaurus and ontology of biomedical concepts, and you know, you can find synonyms, but I think you'll need to see some examples. So let's go to the UMLS website and type in, we use the metathesaurus, upper left, second to left, next to home. It's an engine, and it's going to search the UMLS, and I'll show you what the output is in a second. Let's type in diabetes mellitus, hit OK, and we get actually a very long, lengthy output. I've just cut and pasted a couple key pieces here. We see that when we typed in diabetes mellitus, we got a QE, a concept unique identifier. That is, for every concept that is unique, there is a number, a code, a QE, we call them, or QE, as some people say. So a diabetes mellitus, the QE is 11849. We also find a definition here in the UMLS. A heterogeneous group of disorders characterized by hyperglycemia and glucose intolerance. And we also see that there's a semantic type assigned to diabetes. What is the type? It's a disease or syndrome. Now, we saw before that in SNOMED, it was also a finding. There are various examples where there's some overlap, or it's actually not a contradiction. There are other terms in the UMLS for diabetes, which we'll call it a finding. But for this output here, we see that, I don't know if you can see below definitions, we see that the definition is from MESH. The UMLS is really one big giant semantic network where things are related to each other, and we have all these semantic types, as mentioned, disease or syndrome, diabetes mellitus, and what the key is that there are relationships between the semantic types. So, for example, there could be a simple relationship in this lower, on this portion of the slide, set of useful and important relations, that a disease or syndrome, such as diabetes mellitus, is a pathological function of the pancreas, of course, and pathological function is a semantic type. Disease, and go down to the last one, pathological function, glucose intolerance, occurs in the disease of diabetes. And these relationships can be exploited to attain additional information from a record provided by the terminology. So the point here is that there are relationships that humans have coded between various semantic types. There are approximately in the UMLS 135 semantic types. I've mentioned a couple of them, such as anatomic abnormality and antibiotic, congenital abnormality, disease or syndrome finding. And there are many relationships. Here, there are 54 relationships. Effects is obviously a key one. Associated with diabetes is associated with kidney disease. Diabetes complicates heart disease. Diabetes and kidney disease co-occurs. These relationships are very useful, and this is a map of, I don't know how easy it is to see, but you can see it, all these relationships and the way they're related in the semantic network. You know, for example, we see injury or poisoning can relate to physiological function, or it can relate to anatomical structure. And again, these can be exploited for purposes in understanding the knowledge represented in the electronic health record. This is another example of the hierarchy for the semantic types, and there's also a hierarchy for the relations. The semantic types, I think, is easier to understand. There's the very top is biological function, and then there's physiological function and pathological function. And as I mentioned, I mean, it should be obvious that there's polyhierarchy. You know, there's a limit to how specific. There's a lot of crossover here. Just to sum up, I've mentioned most of the terminologies. You can see that they have their strengths and weaknesses. The ICD-9 at the top, first, it costs money, and it is good for diagnosis. It's good for other tests, diagnostics. It's good for therapy, but it's not great for the other things we mentioned, the physical exam, the past medical history, the history of present illness. You got to look at the key down below. DRGs, diagnosis-related groups, are great for other tests, but they're not good for much else. The drug terminology is great for drugs and, of course, not useful for anything else. I didn't discuss RxNorm. LOINC is great for labs and some diagnostic tests, but not much more. SNOMED and MESH and UMLS are much broader, but they have their own problems as well. They're not strict hierarchies. There's polyhierarchy. It's at times difficult to resolve ambiguity. But these are the main terminologies that we use. And we're going to discuss a little more later on about how we can use UMLS to our advantage. This ends part two, and we will go on to part three, knowledge representation of unstructured data.